For the most recent episode of The Monica Perez Show, please subscribe to The Monica Perez Show on your favorite podcasting platform. Is World War III on the horizon? Janet Yellen says the quiet part out loud. The Vatican talks trans surgery and more. The Monica Perez Show starts now. Hope you are watching live. You can watch this show live on Rockman, Rumble, YouTube, and other video platforms every Tuesday and Thursday at 2 o'clock Pacific, 5 o'clock Eastern. And if you want to support the show, please consider subscribing to the premium feed on iTunes, where you get this show right away, early release, ad-free. And I actually have a 30-day trial going, but even after the trial, it's $4.99 a month, which is less, actually, than a newspaper. And the beauty part is I will actually read that paper, so you don't have to. Now, on with the show. We have at least three stories today, three main stories for sure, that really pointed to World War III to me. I was just looking at it and I thought, I mean, really smoking hot war talk, it seemed to me. So I actually had them listed, the stories, the hot buttons, as the Philippines, Palestine, and Ukraine. And when I was doing my notes, I just kind of crossed off Philippines as China, and then I crossed off Palestine as Iran, and then I crossed off Ukraine as Russia. And I was like, okay, these aren't even thinly veiled proxy wars. Like, I can't even see the proxies. I can only see the actual targets. It has to be big. The enemy always has to be big and bad. It has to be scary enough. I mean, that was even straight out of the report from Iron Mountain. If you need an enemy, it has to be something that matches you, or a conglomerate that matches you in strength. And I want to tell you about each of those stories and others that point in that direction. But first, I want to tell you about what had me alerted to this World War III feeling. I was listening to a podcast recently, hat tip to Brian for sending it to me. It was on Crow 777 Radio, and it was with a guy with the unlikely name, a German guy with the unlikely name of Michael Palmer. He's a doctor and a researcher and a scientist of great credentials, I guess. I'm not sure entirely on the in nuclear weaponry, but if you do your homework, you can figure this stuff out. And boy, was his argument compelling. I'm going to play a mind-blowing clip at the end of the show, so stay tuned till the end from that podcast that really convinces me that Hiroshima and Nagasaki were not hit by nuclear weapons, but by supermassive conventional weapons. But we'll get to that later. But he was explaining about all of that and just slid in that he had a fear that the movie Oppenheimer was made and promoted and made very well as a kind of predictive programming or a foreshadowing of something big that was going to happen, the way, just a reminder of that fear, kind of regenerating that archetype that was established. The same way that movie Pearl Harbor came out in 1999, I think it was, in kind of advance of the new Pearl Harbor, which was 2001. That resonated with me that he suggested that. And that's what my mindset was when I read the newspaper today. And I'll tell you, some of these things are out and out acts of war, starting with this Tehran attack on the consulate. This little blurb I read was a tiny piece in the print version of the paper. I could not find it on the online version, but the little title was Tehran accuses U.S. in consulate attack. It says the Iran foreign minister Hussein Amirab Dolohian. Amirab Dolohian. I'm going with that. I think I got it. He said on Monday that the U.S. gave Israel the green light for a strike on its consulate building on Iran's consulate in Syria that killed 7 Iranian military officials, including 2 generals. I'd heard about this over the past couple of days, but I haven't had a show since then. But he goes on to say that even though Israel basically is taking credit for it, the U.S. and, he said, 2 other European countries who have failed to condemn this attack, he thinks that's an indication of guilt, that at least the U.S. gave a green light. I, of course, guessed, not only because it's very obvious, but also because of another article, like right next to this article in the newspaper, I guessed that the other 2 countries were Britain and France. And I'll tell you about the other story next. But the idea that, so Biden says that the U.S. had no advance knowledge of this. But that doesn't mean they didn't give them the green light. Just because you don't know specifically what they're going to do doesn't mean you don't give them a nod. And of course, I guess there's a chance, like people do go rogue a little bit, like Turkey. I think Turkey would pop off undirected. But I just don't think that's what happened here. Because basically, it's an act of war. Not basically. That's an act of war. You can't blow up a consulate or an embassy. That's an attack on their country. That's what that's considered. It's just asking for war. And I would direct you to, although when I went to look it up on Wikipedia, it's a totally real thing. I'm putting it in from archive.org in the show notes, the Oded Yenon plan, which I don't even know if I can get into the crazy firestorm I started when I read that on the WSB radio show I had like 10 years ago. I was like, wow, have you guys seen this? It was an advisor, I guess, to Sharon in Israel, Oded Yenon, and he said, it was only published in Hebrew, I'll put the translation in the show notes, that like basically had to expand into the surrounding countries to expand Israel. I think was that the one where it was like to the Eretz, Israel, the biblical borders. I can't remember the details. I didn't feel like rereading it, but these skirmishes and expansions into the surrounding countries is consistent with this. Every time I see stuff like that, I'm like, sounds like the Oded Yenon plan. But that was a long time ago. I guess sometimes these things take a long time. It was supposed to be for the 80s, the 1980s, but I guess these things really, really take a long time. Anyhow, so the adjoining article was titled this, British French troops join forces to march in historic parades. And I see this headline, and my first thought was, that sounds like World War I and World War II. And then I read the article, and it is openly invoking that idea, that memory. They say, let's see, I got a couple of quotes here from the article. French troops joined their British counterparts in the famous changing of the guards ceremony outside Buckingham Palace. That in itself, it says for the first time, that in itself is kind of crazy. That's like doing joint exercises with Mexico and Texas. I'm like, is that for when there's a U.S. uprising? Like, I would not be fired up to have French, even symbolic French troops, as part of that very British sovereign ritual. Anyway, they said it was a show of solidarity between Britain and France amid the war in Ukraine. And Britain did something similar outside the Elysee Palace in France. It gets worse. It marks the 120th anniversary of the 1904 Entente Cordiale that paved the way for their collaboration in World War I and World War II. By the way, if you have not read The Secret Origins of the First World War by Jerry Dougherty and Jim McGregor, I highly recommend. I am currently reading part 2 of that called Prolonging the Agony. So this Entente Cordiale, whether it was established by or hijacked by the Rhodes Group, the Milners, whatever, the Round Table, they tried for so many years to get war with Germany because of the German industrial miracle, basically, that was taking place. It was purely economic provocation, all of that. It's really tragic. Criminal. It's criminal. Anyway, I don't want that to be invoked in anything that's happening right now. They're telling you, they want you to think about world war. President Macron, whom I don't have a single, like, I mean, nothing but bad things to think about him, said on social media, faced with the resurgence of war in Europe, we stand together to defend the values we share and to support Ukraine as it defends itself against its aggressor. The inversion of that makes me so freaking crazy when there's audio of the U.S. plotting and executing the coup in Ukraine against a democratically elected president. I can't say it enough times. And they had to get Nazis to execute this because they couldn't get Ukrainians to fight each other. It was so unfair. Outrageous. Anyway. But just say, you know, see, it's amazing how many people fly those Ukrainian flags. I still see them. I'm like, are you just pure ignorance? It's just pure ignorance. It can't be anything else. Well, I mean, I guess it could be deviousness. So here's the thing. We were sold this idea of the UN, which was absolutely meant to be the prototype of a world government lacking only the power to tax and a military to enforce their laws. But it was meant to be a prototype for that. And we were sold that because of the European wars were so devastating. There'll never be another war in Europe because of this. These guys are all promoting NATO like crazy, and Macron wants NATO troops in Ukraine. And I mean, at least if you're going to sell us the UN as the world's peacekeeper, then use it as such. But that, of course, is not what they want. And it's not just Macron who wants that. And actually, when he said it a couple of weeks ago, I was so shocked and horrified. And now, just a couple of days ago, here's a U.S. Secretary of State Blinken, or as I like to call him, Babraham Blinken. No, I'm just kidding. He's not a babe. I wish you were a babe. I wish that were a funny joke, but he's not a babe. He's a chilling, multi-generational deep stater. The guy's bad news. Anyway, he said, The Ukraine, that really tweaks Russia haters, says it will be part of NATO. Here's a quote. Ukraine will become a member of NATO. Our purpose at the summit is to help build a bridge to that membership, Blinken told reporters in Brussels. I mean, that is also war. That would be absolutely war. The minute that happens, we may actually be in a de facto state of war with Russia the minute that happens, because Russia owns Crimea. They basically always had a right to it. It is the San Diego of Russia. It's where the Black Sea Fleet is. And they had an election after our coup against Ukraine, where the first order of business of our who installed government was to ban Russian as an official language. And those Eastern oblasts and Crimea are primarily Russian-speaking. So you're disenfranchising them. They can't understand they can't even understand how to vote if you can't understand the words, right? So Crimea voted almost unanimously, and I would say unanimously, to go with Russia, to become a part of Russia and leave Ukraine. So Russia's there. They would, even if they hadn't voted that, Russia was there, that their ships are there. That's where their fleet is harbored. That means that if Ukraine and U.S. right now claim that Crimea is still a part of Ukraine. So I know I've explained this before, but you gotta say what you're, not everybody hears every show. So in Ukraine, Russia's in Ukraine right now. So if Ukraine becomes NATO, then Russia, according to NATO, is occupying a NATO country. And that is a state of war. So I actually think when they were threatening to do that and Russia said, all right, enough is enough, we're going to go in there and rescue the Donbass, that he was saving us from World War III. But these guys won't stop. They won't stop. I'm absolutely convinced that World War III is coming. They're definitely making us think this. I'm not receiving these signals because they're not being sent. They're being sent. Absolutely. But do they really want World War III? I don't know. Do they want us to think World War III is coming? Maybe the game plan is to threaten, to make us feel threatened by lockdown, by supply chain interruptions or rations or whatever, so that we're just so traumatized. Like maybe COVID was a demonstration of strength, of power, of, you know, give us a taste. And then when we see it coming, we will accept peace at any cost, including world government, perhaps. So maybe they're just the whole World War III thing. It does smack of fear-mongering, but we also have an awful lot of weapons. They got to blow off some of those weapons, or they can't keep building more. Where are they even going to put them? They probably want to blow them off just so they don't have to. They can refill their silos with new weapons. So I'm a little worried about that. I definitely expect explosions, and we're seeing plenty of explosions. We're seeing them in Palestine. We're seeing them in Ukraine. So I believe there will be plenty of that. Do I think that this World War III thing is being pumped up for strategic reasons? Yes, I do. Does that mean it's not going to really hurt people and destroy things and change the state of the world? I think it's meant to. That's what I think it's meant to do. So the third thing was, here's the title, China plays tense game of Russian roulette, quote, with U.S. ally. Chinese Coast Guard ships have slammed Philippine boats with water cannons, shattering a windshield and injuring a Filipino crew. You might have heard about this. It's kind of interesting. I'll just read exactly what happened. I hate to get that wrong. In early March, or what they're saying happened. In early March, two Chinese Coast Guard ships slammed a Philippine boat with high-pressure blasts of water cannon, smashing its windshield and preventing it from delivering supplies to a military outpost. A few weeks later, during another Philippine resupply run, Chinese water cannons hit the boat again, leaving its interior in shambles and injuring three Filipino naval personnel. They were headed to the Second Thomas Shoal. Have you all heard of that? I had no idea what that was, what it meant, or anything. And in my quick survey of the situation, I was looking at maps of the South China Sea, and there's, I guess, three shoals named after Thomas something or other. It seemed like a British guy, Admiral something, I don't know. And this particular one, I don't know if they're all this, but it's a reef, basically, or it's a shoal, whatever that is, surrounded by a reef that's submerged sometimes in high tide, and it's exposed in low tide. There's no place you can really be on it because it's submerged on the regular. But what they did in the 90s, I think, is they sunk. I say they, I mean the Filipinos are credited with sinking it. We're obviously hand in hand in this whole situation from the beginning. And I believe this is our outpost, not theirs, but they get to claim it because it's 200 or within 200 nautical miles of one of their islands, Philippines. China claims the whole South China Sea. But anyway, so what they did was they sunk a World War II ship in the shoal, on the shoal, so that it would be always above the water. So they would have like a little, like almost like a raft. Like I think it was just like a raft. They're all hanging out on it in the middle of the reservoir. But what is rusting and deteriorating, it's going away basically. And supposedly China's waiting for it to disintegrate. But in the meanwhile, there are naval personnel there and the Philippines have to resupply it. And they would also like to fix it. But for me, of course, this just feels like a U.S. outpost. And, you know, China says they own that sea. I understand the idea of having international waters like off a certain amount of your coast. So it's not crystal clear. However, the problem with this whole story, why I'm telling you this, is two things. We have a mutual defense treaty with Manila. That's completely illegitimate. My father taught me a long time ago, you cannot have an alliance with someone who does not provide you a benefit, a defensive benefit. That's why George Washington was a continentalist. It's like you can have alliances on the continent, but beyond the oceans, they're nothing but trouble. They are entanglements. And that's what this is. Manila could not possibly offer us defense. We have half of the weapons in the world, or half of the defense budget of the entire world, everyone else put together. Now, if we're looking for war, they can certainly provide that. They can give us an outpost where we can launch a war on China. Or be a target because we, with this defense treaty, it's, let's see, it says, it extends to armed attacks on Philippine armed forces, public vessels, and aircraft, including those of his Coast Guard, anywhere in the South China Sea. And of course, we can ask them to provoke such attacks, or they can be reckless about it because maybe they want to flex their muscle. Not at all kosher. And then it says, somewhere else in the article, I can't remember, the U.S. might start escorting these supply boats. Of course, that's then what does China do? Do they get to pop off on the U.S. boats? And then what happens? That's another. So now we're talking about rumors of war in Europe, in the Middle East, and in Asia. Those are the trilats. I mean, I guess Africa is involved in that. Yeah, I mean, I think those are basically the three places you'd have to have the war. This is the second thing. I have to do a double take. You know when you ever get, did anyone ever tell you something shocking, either shockingly tragic or like a really funny joke? It's hard to remember that you already heard it. Like something, I'm sure something about your brain chemistry just snaps it up. So I'm shocked afresh when I read that the Philippine president is Ferdinand Marcos Jr., the son of Imelda and Ferdinand Marcos Sr., who was, they were so, I remember when they were deposed, they were so unbelievably corrupt. It was insane. It was insane. This is an old article, so probably 10 years old or something. It says, during a two-decade conjugal dictatorship, as it came to be known, Ferdinand and Imelda pillaged up to $10 billion. These people are not rich. Those people were poor, the Filipinos. To finance their extravagant lifestyle, nearly 20 years after their downfall and in spite of an extensive recovery effort, most of that wealth is still missing. Yeah, I remember that it was just a scandal that she had just a room full, if not a house full of shoes, like Hermes and Birkin bags, like a whole closet full of Birkin bags, which are insanely expensive. It says Ferdinand's three terms as president from 65 to 86 were marked by rampant corruption, political repression, and human rights abuses. She spent her tenure as First Lady buying shoes, rare artwork, multi-million dollar properties, and lots of jewels. So they were deposed. It said allegations of mass cheating, political turmoil, and human rights abuses led to the People Power Revolution of February 1986, which removed them from power. And now this kid's there, and it says that he's, what do you know? He's renewed his alliance with the U.S., which had soured under his predecessor, Rodrigo Duterte. Yeah, so, and he's also strengthening ties with Japan and Australia. Go figure. Wonder where he got his funding from. But corruption is in the eye of the beholder, because this is what I've noticed, that I noticed it in investigating Ukraine, actually, over the years, that they have these international corruption panels and pursuits and all this kind of stuff. And my theory is that everybody's corrupt. They want you to be corrupt. It was that old Godfather thing. Like, how do you, if the guy's squeaky clean, like, how do you work with a guy like that? They want you to be corrupt. And if you're not already corrupt, I think that they actually do literally set you up with the pictures, you know, drug you and put you in bed with like a boy or something like that, so that they have you over the coals. But I do believe that what they do with these corruption trials is they pick and choose who gets removed for corruption. So I noticed another article today was that the Panama Papers trial is starting, and there are 27. This is all the law firm employees. This, what was it called? Mossack Fonseca. There was this revelation of all these different officials, politicians, and other people too, kind of hiding their money, burying their money in Panama and otherwise kind of laundering their money. And some politicians did have to go. So the Icelandic prime minister had to resign after these allegations. Actually, I think it was probably proof So I'm just saying they don't have to say, it's like the Operation Varsity Blues. Like some, they didn't prosecute some people and some people they prosecuted. And it wasn't based on innocence and guilt because some people got off later. And like Lori Loughlin was absolutely not guilty. And they, whatever, left her. They went after her with a vengeance. So yeah, for him. Anyway, so that's a problem. That's a, these little places where they're trying to start little brush fires of war. I hope they're just messing with us. Okay, so let's though get back to Middle East story that caught my eye. Well, I mean, it was a huge story on the front page. It says, Hamas feud with Palestinian rivals adds to doubts over Gaza's post-war future. Simmering confrontation with West Bank-based Palestinian Authority is fresh sign of deep divisions over who will manage the enclave. So what's happening is, so Israel's bombing the crap out of Gaza after the October 7th thing, which, I mean, don't even get me started on that. I think everybody knows it's preposterous to think that hang gliders and such penetrated the Iron Dome. So I think it was just an excuse. But Palestine, what's left of Palestine, is Gaza and the West Bank. And in the West Bank, the Palestinian Authority, also known as Fatah or formerly known as Fatah, I'm not sure. They're secular. And then supposedly Hamas is this like religious nut jobs in Gaza. But there's reason to believe that that came out of Israel as well, because the current leader supposedly was under the wing of and learned under the guy who established Hamas. And they were both in an Israeli prison while that happened. And this to me is, when I see someone was in the prison, I think the prison is like the college. The college of controlled opposition, and then they release, or a terrorist or whatever, then they release them back to the original country, and they have been, I'm not even going to say brainwashed. I mean, they probably were picked to go to jail in the first place because they were known to be good targets for cooperators, and then they're released back, and they cause all sorts of trouble. So now I feel like Hamas and Fatah, Hamas is saying, we don't want Fatah to, I don't know how to pronounce it, let's say the Palestinian Authority in Gaza. This is a total setup. We hate them. They're bad. They cooperate with Israel and the U.S., which they definitely, definitely do. But to me, what's happening here is they're setting up to have, call it a second state, you know, Palestine, whatever. They are, I mean, most of the stuff is out on the table. They're giving the Palestinian Authority the right to distribute aid in Gaza, even though it's a West Bank entity, in order to soften up the Palestinian people to want the Palestinian Authority to be the new government. And there, Israel and the U.S. are already recruiting politicians and businessmen and stuff to be part of this aid distribution future government thing. Now, in order to give it, well, on the one hand, they give it legitimacy by constantly saying that Netanyahu is staunchly opposed to the two-state solution. So when it happens, it's going to look like some kind of victory, even though it's definitely the plan and has been all along, in my opinion. And then they have Hamas there to take the place, to be the controlled opposition. So for me, it's like the rhinos. You know, they take the place of real Republicans and the Republican Party or whatever, real Republic, or let's say Ron Paul type people, like constitutionalists or people of principle. So they're never meant to take power. They're meant to be the second party, and they're meant to be a place taker, not a place holder. So that if anybody did want to mount a resistance, a real resistance to the powers that be, it would be absorbed or overshadowed by the sub party, whatever. So that's what I think is going on there. Let's see if I missed anything. Oh, yeah. So in the ceasefire, the U.S. has a ceasefire proposal out there. And part of it is that it's very confusing because a while back, Hamas said there were no remaining hostages. But this still seems to be the excuse that Israel's using to continue their bombardment. But they want to trade 40 hostages for 900 Palestinian prisoners. And I just think that's funny because I do think that the prisons are the incubators for the controlled opposition. So those Palestinian prisoners, say they had 9,000 Palestinian prisoners. I don't know how many they had, probably. Then you can choose the 900 who are, again, that many are called, few are chosen, who you're going to send back into the society. I could give you many examples, but I will not. I will move on with the last item about this story. Again, I feel like the atrocities and the atrocity propaganda, but really the actual atrocities may be used, may be there to, yeah, I mean, to force a conclusion here where the Palestinians will take anything to make it stop. So even though it's pretty clear this Palestinian Authority is a total puppet, but so is Hamas, in my opinion, that they'll just take it because it's got to stop. I mean, it's got to stop. It's got to stop. Whew. So that's that. Let's get to, got a couple more stories, but let us get to some comments if we have any. Let's see what we got here. All right, Jakers, thanks for joining us. First time to catch us live. Joe, not a Fed. Oh my gosh, Joe, not a Fed. Let me thank you. Well, it might be too late, but I don't know if you guys know. There's like, this always happens where like people die at the same, you know, and like I call them death clusters. Like they die in threes or whatever. In my case, there's usually a dog involved. So my sweet, I'm totally not super sad about it anymore, but like I was crying for like 2 days when I realized that my super adorable, super fluffy golden retriever whom we rescued, she has like a clipped bark and everything. She's just so pathetic but adorable, has cancer. And she's really running down pretty fast. But Joe pointed out to me a couple of times because I wasn't really registering that their ivermectin is in human trials hand in hand with chemo and getting really good results. And they've also done it with dogs. It's an anti-tumor agent. Ivermectin, that the much maligned thing that was supposedly working against COVID. I wonder if it didn't even work. I don't know if it works against COVID or not, but if it was just there to be maligned because it could actually cure cancer and it's cheap. So it needs to be demonized. So I actually, at Joe's prompting, I looked into it a bit and I asked my vet if he would let me give it to the dog because they have to get it for you. It's super highly controlled in California. And to his credit, he looked at the stuff and he's like, I have no reason to think this is going to work, but you can try. It might hurt her, but yeah. But I mean, she's absolutely on her last legs. Literally, she can hardly walk. She's happy. She just wags her tail. She eats. But I have a son in college who, like, he's her boy. So she's his dog and he's her boy. And he said, when dogs are dying, they are looking for their person and he's her person. So he wants me to fly him in if she's got to go. And I'm just worried because he's got finals. It's going to be difficult. And I would just like for her to be here a little longer so they could have some quality time. So I'm going to try this ivermectin. I think it may be too late. This was one time also that I was like, wanted to call my mom. Like, this is what happens when your parents die. Like, it bums you out when you want to talk to them. And so I was like, totally bummed. I wanted to call my mom. And then I realized not only could I not call her, but I'm not sure how much help she would have been because I was raised, my parents were dirt poor, but they spent even their weekends volunteering and marching for life and all that kind of stuff. And they basically, quote, did not believe in pets or art. They were like, you're wasting resources. Why have a pet when you could have another kid or take care of like starving people? And these people who donate millions of dollars to the opera, like they considered it basically immoral because that money could be used to like feed millions of people. I actually can't live like that. I like the pets and I like, you know, I think beauty and art are important. I think we're more integrated than that philosophy. had me thinking, I don't know though. But anyway, so she wouldn't have been much help in this case. Okay, so yes, Joe, thank you. Joe points out that the same countries who did not condemn hitting the Iranian embassy or consulate did condemn Ecuador's invasion of the Mexican embassy. Well, Ecuador is our puppet, so I'm confused by that, but it's just a different game. While staying silent on the Israeli attack in Syria. Yes, that's the thing. Like, they just, those are sovereign countries. I don't understand why it's okay to bomb them. I think, Frightening Me says, I think the Khazarian connection to Ukraine and the Israeli conflict are somehow connected. I will say, if you know the theory of the Khazaria, it was Arthur Kessler, a British Jewish guy who was a good writer. He wrote the case of the midwife Toad, which was great. It was great. And it was a whitewash cover up, but it pointed out that Darwin's theories were proven untrue very quickly. And the guy who did it, Kammerer, was probably assassinated or shot himself twice in the head. Anyway, he wrote The 13th Tribe, which is about how this huge country, Khazaria, whatever, on the steppe, converted to Judaism. It's a long story, but, and then they were, so they're the like Ashkenazi or whatever. Actually, Courtney Turner will tell me they are not the Ashkenazi, I think. Anyway, they're the non-Sephardic Jews. I think that might be the Ashkenazi. Anyway, their migratory pattern after they were overtaken by the Rus, I think, where they went up to Ukraine. So that's why if you hear stories of the Holocaust or whatever, where there's the millions of Jews, because there were only 500,000 Jews in Germany, were in, I think, Ukraine and up there. And this supposedly, I don't know if it's been proven or not, where they were the ones who came up from the East. So that's also why a lot of the, I think that Ukraine is of special interest. I think maybe Yatsenyuk, the puppet leader of Ukraine after we ousted Yanukovych, might have been a dual citizen with Israel. It's quite possible. Okay. Kolomoisky was, and he was the rabbi, so to speak, of Zelensky. Anyway, this is already past my depth. Oh yeah, Vicky the Noodle, whose husband, Robert Kagan, by coincidence, Kagan means king in Khazarian, and I believe he's Ukrainian. I think that's kind of, you know, full circle. Make the Monroe Doctrine great again. Oh, I think they're working on it. I think that the U.S. total domination of the Western Hemisphere is definitely what Biden and Harris have been working on. Oh, that's right. Jack says that Netanyahu admitted that he was instrumental in creating Hamas. I think Ian Davis wrote a great story about that on Off Guardian, if I'm not mistaken. Yep, I think this is true. And I think there are other reasons, too. I think they basically replaced the Yasser Arafat stuff, which was making headway. Joe says, I have articles sourced from Israel showing how Netanyahu kept Hamas in power in Gaza to keep a rift between Gaza and the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank. Ivermectin is taken globally as a prophylactic. Ivermectin is in HeartGuard. It's in HeartGuard. That is what HeartGuard is. So I immediately went to Amazon to see if I could get HeartGuard instead of whatever I use, Trifexis or whatever. I hardly ever give it to the dogs anyway, but I would now because it is a prophylactic. So if you're in a state that allows HeartGuard, you might want to consider that. Yes, the book I was speaking of is, I'm reading now Prolonging the Agony, but the first one you should read is Hidden History, The Secret Origins of World War I by Dougherty and McGregor. Man, there's a lot of comments here. For the first time ever, I'm not sure I can get through them all. They're saying that it was Netanyahu's plan to build that port that we are putting in there for supposedly humanitarian aid, but he asked for it in October. So before the humanitarian crisis, before the thing where the Israeli troops were trying to give aid and killed 100 people instead. So whether he knew there was going to be a humanitarian crisis or not, obviously we're being manipulated. Wow, this is so interesting about the phenbendazole and ivermectin as possible cancer cures. And the ivermectin, they're doing the trials with chemo, so you don't have to have a huge fight or go through some like mental gymnastics to choose. They're using them at the same time. Jack, loved my interview with Jim Lee. What are the lines in the sky? That was mind-blowing. I think we all have an obligation to go to climateviewer.com or climateviewer.org and really dig into Jim's work. Because what Jim said, I mean, it's like a 2.5 hour interview and I've gotten huge, big snaps. So go in there and listen to yourself. But one of the things that made me feel better was that most of what we're seeing is pollution, which I, you know, that when the planes go by and they leave a trail and then those trails become clouds, there are nasty things in the fuel, which is what that is. I don't know if it's cheap or whatever, but it is. Every single line in the sky is not meant to do a specific weather modification thing. And I don't think it's necessarily, according to him, like spraying viruses on us. Like, he doesn't have proof of that. And I don't know why it made me feel a little better to just understand it. Let me just, I don't know if I should do it. Let me do one more story and then we'll hit the clip, which is fun. The clip is really interesting. Okay, so here's my last story. Yellen's, gosh, I have so many stories left. Okay, but I'm just going to do this one. Yellen's tough message to China. Uh-oh. I hear the sick dog, which means she's going to go to the bathroom on my floor. Okay. Yellen's tough message to China on exports tests fragile détente. The Treasury Secretary used a trip to Beijing to warn her counterparts against China's export practices. So this is what I say. She's saying the quiet part out loud. She says, and what she does is she distills the very essence of our economic model right now and what it, and they don't admit it. I don't think they admit it openly, but I am just more and more convinced that this is exactly what it is, which is to subsidize consumption. And for us, we redistribute wealth to maximize consumption and wealth transfer to the oligarchs and their collaborators. So you have all the worker people, lower class and middle class. The middle class would have a lot of surplus and they could become the upper class. They could make investments. They could live better. They could get somewhere. Then the lower class maybe doesn't consume as much as they otherwise would if they were fat cats like the middle class. So what they do is with the progressive taxation, which is largely meant to keep the middle class down, but they brainwash the middle class with this what's called obsessional propaganda, with all the homelessness, all of that poverty in your face, in your face, in your face, which is why I think they do it that way, so that they are okay with these high taxes. And they take the high taxes, they give it to the lower class so the lower class can spend the money because the middle class can't consume as much as it produces. So they transfer it to the lower class so they can consume it. And even drug addicts and stuff, those people are consuming a really expensive product. They need the money and they are not getting it by working. And then what you have is there's no surplus in middle class or lower class. There's taxation and consumption that pushes all the excess productivity or the value of that up. But she actually said it to China. The article says a central U.S. concern is that the Chinese economy has a shortage of domestic demand to absorb its industrial supply, meaning the excess is shipped to global markets where it suppresses prices. I mean, that used to be cheap goods, which we should like. It should benefit us. Yellen said that Chinese policymakers should take steps such as bolstering public retirement benefits and making education more affordable to help spur consumer spending. So, bolstering public retirement benefits and make education more affordable to spur spending, not to benefit the people. She is absolutely blatantly saying that. So today we heard how Biden wants to lower, that wants to pay off people's school loans again. You know, you would think it's just to buy votes, which is very typical. I remember Obama did something like that. But it's also to just, especially if it's debt financed, it just pushes the money into the system to increase consumption. And it can also increase inflation, which I wanted to get to, but I can't get to it right now. So anyway, she says that this would close the imbalance between supply and demand in the Chinese economy. So instead of just saying like you can, she just, they want everyone to be materialist consumers to maximize their production so and their consumption. But if that government actually loved them and was not a pathocracy, if they are actually in it for their people, they wouldn't want that. That doesn't make people better off or happier. If you have underconsumption, if people are content that you have more stuff that they can use, maybe they'll spend time with their families. Maybe they'll grow a garden. Maybe they'll be less stressed out. I mean, the idea that the goal is this constant pressure to produce and consume. And here they tell us it's because you want to make the pie bigger so that poor people can get more without taking some away from the people who already made it. I am absolutely at this point not buying that one bit. So she was repeatedly asked about just raising tariffs, which was Trump's type of thing. And she said she didn't want to do that. She said, this is a complicated issue that involves their entire macroeconomic and industrial strategy. So she wants to totally restructure their economy and their industrial strategy to subsidize consumption. She didn't even tell them to cut production. She just wanted to subsidize consumption. And that's back, when you think back at East Germany, like that was a big part of that, is that they wanted to, I think they wanted to just open up that market. All right, let me just quickly say what the diamond thing was about inflation. They're arguing that, they're reporting like crazy that he said that interest rates might go up to 8%. From what I could tell, it's like a 70-page letter, so I didn't read the whole thing. But from what I could tell, he was saying we're running models of interest rates as low as 2% and as high as 8%. That's what you do. You want to see your downside and your upside. And when he put it in that stress test, he said, my bank can make it either way. So that's not a prediction. Those are the parameters of his very extreme downside, very extreme upside case scenario. However, he does say that the reasons why he thinks interest rates could get high, like for that, I would call it the downside case, it's risk of record high deficit spending and geopolitical stress complicating the fight against inflation. He says huge fiscal spending, trillions needed each year for the green economy, the remilitarization of the world, and the restructuring of global trade. Slip that in. That's probably what the supply side stuff is all about. Are all inflationary. And I would say they're only inflationary because they're debt-driven. Real inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon, according to Milton Friedman, and it's true. You have to print money to get real inflation. But in order to get that inflation, as Powell said, they have to engage in deficit spending. So that's why we've got inflation, is that all this deficit spending, and they like that. They want that. That's their goal. That's why they're just looking for ways to spend the money. They don't care how it comes. They want consumption and they're willing to subsidize it. And that's what she's suggesting for China. That was a lot. That was a lot. So let's get to our fun clip. It's just mind blowing. There's a big mushroom cloud over my head right now. My mind is blown. This is the guy, Michael Palmer, on Crow 777 Radio, Crow 777 Radio. He's talking about how Hiroshima and Nagasaki were not nuclear weapons. And when he, this one little clip, which seemed like an afterthought to me, I was like, oh yeah, yeah, it can't be true. I will leave you with this.
And on the other hand, there isn't any reason why a nuclear detonation should create a mushroom cloud.
Oh, is that right?
Why would it? I mean, what should this cloud consist of? What does this cloud consist of? It's either water vapor, right? Condensed water vapor, or it is smoke, or it's a mixture of both. Okay. A nuclear weapon doesn't generate water vapor, and there is nothing that gets oxidized. There is simply no substance that could actually form a mushroom cloud. It simply releases heat, right? And a little bit of material, but nothing, there is no matter that could actually form the substance of a mushroom cloud. And also, if you have these black mushroom clouds, what is black? Black is soot, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the black soot in a mushroom cloud from TNT simply stems from the incomplete combustion of the carbon in the explosive, right? If you look at the structural formula of TNT, you will find out there simply isn't enough oxidizer to fully oxidize all the carbon. So this is why you have some soot left over. And this gives you the black part of the mushroom cloud. Then in a nuclear detonation, the heat should be so great that everything should be at a white glow, but not a red glow, right? You see in these mushroom clouds, you see red glow. Red glow isn't hot enough for a nuclear detonation. So there really isn't any reason to expect that a true nuclear bomb should produce this kind of smoky, red glowing mushroom cloud. It's totally implausible.
No, it's a good point. And by the way, I have read descriptions where they claim the nuclear explosion is as hot as the sun. If it was anywhere near that, it should vaporize everything.
Yeah, that's one thing. Also, it should have the color of the sun, right? It should be white. It should be white or bright yellow, but it shouldn't be red. So that's exactly the point.